Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on Newsybar.tv. Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Please let me know if I am coming in at least partially loud and clear. I'm hoping my connection stays stable today. It is 50 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. It definitely has been a nice couple of days here. We actually almost got to 80 degrees on not yesterday, but Monday. It was pretty amazing. Got a little bit of sunshine. My face actually got some color, and it was enjoyable. It was hot, though. Definitely coming from single digits to 80 degrees within a month. Your body needs a little bit of acclimation. So I don't know if I'm coming in loud and clear. I'm gonna try and do a show today. Been a couple days, so hope everybody didn't get too concerned that I ran reprods. I had to. Definitely needed a break. My twitchy eye was getting out of control there. So last week we spent a lot of time looking at who even knows. I don't remember. Same shit, different day. All kinds of different things. I have no fucking idea. And I don't have a good connection here. So even trying to get to the show from last week to see what I titled them. Take a look at the titles, you'll see. It was all kinds of good stuff, I know. I know we did big data. We looked at that Patil guy that Obama hired as the first CTO, Chief Technology Officer for the United States, and we find out that his first big project is working on Obamacare. Of course it is. Get us all into the database. I've actually dug up a bunch of stuff since then, but I don't have the capability to play clips here today, so I think I'm going to save the majority of that stuff for tomorrow and Friday when I will be back in my studio where I can play clips. But there are a few things that I found interesting. We had talked about, and I think I might have played the very beginning before I ran out of time on Friday, Intel with their new processor that picks up hand movements. They had these four robotic spiders sitting on a table, and they had the CEO of Intel talking about their new processor, and I don't even remember what the name of the processor was, but you can search CES, which is the Consumer Electronic, whatever it stands for, that they have every year in Vegas. It's the big, you know, everybody shows their brand new wares coming out. But they had the CEO of Intel there, and he was showing their new processor and showing how it had this ability to react to hand movements. He had these four robotic spiders sitting on a table, showed how just with a wave of a hand, he could turn them on, he could turn them off, and he could get them all to raise their one leg and do a Heil Hitler toward him. It was a pretty scary looking scene. We have also talked about over the last couple weeks, tech companies being involved in China. Apple was the one in particular. And with this whole Chinese international bank happening and them opening up their stock market to foreign investment and all the countries kind of trying to sign on here with the Chinese bank, you know, there's definitely some sort of financial move going. Well, I found this little tidbit interesting out of RT from the other day after seeing that Intel video and knowing what we know about China. This one is titled U.S. Bans Intel from Sending Computer Chips to China Amid Nuclear Research Fears. So they're saying nuclear research fears. I'm gonna think after seeing that video with the robo spiders that the U.S. is also concerned about the Intel chips being used in some sort of drone slash robotic warfare. I'll actually have to play this other video tomorrow as well from the CES with this chick that is wearing the spider dress using the Intel chip. It's got those spiders mounted to either shoulder, and they react And Intel's chip has the ability, because they said this in there, has the ability to react to the wearer's emotions. And the spider dress on her shoulders, when she gets upset or feels, and it also has proximity sensors, by the way, when people get too close, these spider legs shoot out of her shoulders on this dress to keep people away from her. I'm like, holy shit, could you see that on a soldier as a piece of armor? And those are going to be like X-Men freaking blades on the ends of those spider legs. Who's ever heard of a processor being able to determine emotions of the wearer? This new Intel processor is going to be specifically, they had said, for wearables. That's what they call them, wearable computing, where they put them into your clothing and things. So this is very disturbing. So anyway, I totally, when I caught this headline about the US banning Intel from sending chips to China, it definitely piqued my interest. US bans Intel from sending computer chips to China amid nuclear research fears. Of course, nuclear is always what they, because people think it's big, bad, and scary, they'll put it on there. But there's a lot more big, bad, and scary than nuclear. A Chinese supercomputer ranked the fastest in the world 4 years running could soon slip from that top spot. And by the way, if I am not mistaken, that supercomputer is now being run by one of the former heads of the Google Brain Project. He left and he went to go run the Chinese project. Chinese supercomputer ranked the fastest in the world 4 years running, and it could slip from that spot. Intel, the US-based microprocessor maker, says it has been blocked by the US government from selling chips to China. Representatives for Intel Corp confirmed to the Wall Street Journal this week that it has stopped shipping microprocessors to Chinese customers after the Department of Commerce announced recently, with little fanfare, that it has begun restricting exports to certain entities there over national security concerns. According to the Commerce Department, the chips are powering high-speed supercomputers, and they're being used to conduct nuclear research on behalf of the Chinese government. I mean, I love the way they put this into nuclear research, but I'm telling you, their brain project is pretty far along. Like I said, they have the former head of Google's brain computer, their cognitive computing computer, has moved over there, and they are also have Apple in their right-hand pocket. So this to me is a little bit unusual. I mean, I haven't seen anything about the United States condemning Apple from doing business over there, or General Electric, or any of these other big corporations that are doing business, and not just small business, but big business in China. So this definitely caught my attention. And one of the other things, if I don't know if you knew this, but Intel in this country does a lot of work with NASA, so that could be why there's some concern here. The group determined that the National University of Defense Technology, the National Supercomputing Center in Changsha, the National Supercomputing Center in Guangzhou, and the National Supercomputing Center in Tianjin, all located in the People's Republic of China, should be shunned because they've been ordering chips from Intel to build supercomputers, quote, believed to be used in nuclear explosive activities, according to the Commerce Department. Now, they have a little screenshot of Intel's official news from April 7, 2015. It was one of their tweets. Says Pound Intel marks 30 years in China with new products, investment, joint efforts to drive future innovation. And there's a link to a story. So apparently Intel's been doing business there for 30 years, and we just decided now, oops, it might be a bad idea. I'm just wondering if this doesn't have anything to do with the Chinese fucking takeover that's going on right now. Of course it does. Specifically, the notice says that, quote, NUNT, which I don't even know what NUNT stands for. Hold on, I hate when they put acronyms and don't tell you what it is. NUNT, the National University of Defense Technology in China, has used US origin multi-cores, boards, and processors to produce the Tianhe A and the Tianhe 2 supercomputers located at the National Supercomputer Centers in Changzhou, Qingdao, and Tianjin. The Tianhe 2 was named in 2014 as the world's top supercomputer for the fourth consecutive year by Top 500 Project, a group that has been rating high-speed machines since the early 1990s. Once an entity is added to Commerce Department's entity list, American firms must obtain a specialized export license to send products there, the journal reported. And you know, it's not like the U.S. government hasn't been doing that for a long time, because I remember back even in the 90s, any browser that had encryption, which most of them did. I mean, you didn't have very many back in those days. You had Netscape Navigator and Internet Explorer. If you had encryption, that was what they considered strong encryption. So in the early days, there really wasn't any encryption. And then I think the first encryption was like 56 or 64-bit. Maybe it's 56. It was 56 was the DES, and then DES, that was DES, and then there was triple DES, which was 128-bit. And the most recent encryption software with the encryption algorithm that was like new and improved was not allowed to be exported. And when we would bring up those products, it would literally say in big bold capital letters in the description, not for export. So when the 128-bit encrypted browser came out, that was the not for export, but the 56-bit, the older version, was allowed to be exported to those other countries that might be on the watch list. And that was because obviously the NSA already had the ability to hack that encryption, so they felt that their spying capabilities would not be hindered by exporting that. But it also gave businesses and entities in the United States using the next highest level of encryption a benefit over these other rogue nations, let's say. So I'm just saying, as an establishment, this isn't like they've never done this before. I've seen for 20 years that they've had not for export on certain products, but just this is kind of new to me, as far as somebody like Intel, who is a global manufacturer of processors, to all of a sudden shut down such a large country as China. I'm sure there's going to be massive profits lost over that, and I'm sure Intel is probably not very happy about it. But again, remember, they're in bed with like NASA and doing stuff for the space program. So I'm sure that Intel probably can't publicly say too much on the negative about it. Says, once an entity is added to the Commerce Department's quote entity list, American firms must obtain a specialized export license to send products there, the journal reported. In the February notice published in the Federal Register, the department acknowledged that these licenses are quote usually subject to a policy of denial unquote. Indeed, Intel spokesman Chuck Molloy told reporters this week that his company was notified by the Commerce Department last August and told that it would soon need an export license to continue shipping the powerful Xeon processors to China. Yeah, I had one of those. Those things were like a freaking paperback book as far as the size of a processor. I don't know, they're probably a bit smaller now, but I remember when the Xeon first came out and it had that slot instead of a chip, a PG chip connection to the motherboard. It was like this freaking slot one, it was called. This thing looked like a small paperback book, weighed like 2 or 3 pounds. It was a monster. Quote, they were selling them standard off-the-shelf parts before being warned of the impending Commerce Department restrictions, he told Customs Today. Then, once we got the letter, we stopped the shipment of the parts at Intel. Intel complied with the notification and applied for a license, which was denied, said Molloy in a statement this week, and we are in compliance with the U.S. law. Well, of course, because now they're all worried about shareholder, whatever the word I'm looking for, backlash. Now, without the addition of Intel-made components, the maintainers of the world's fastest supercomputer will have to look elsewhere into its to hold on to its ranking. The top 500 project says that the Tihani 2 has 16,000 nodes, each with two Intel Xeon Ivy Bridge processors and three Xeon Phi processors for a combined total. Listen to how many fucking chips they have. 3,120,000 computing cores. This is beyond massive. The BBC reported that the machine uses that power to crunch numbers at a speed of 33 petaflops, or roughly 33 quadrillion calculations per second. Just imagine that. According to some experts, blocking shipments of U.S. chips to China may only further enable foreign companies to ramp up their own research efforts. And that is true. I mean, if you're shipping U.S. products there, just like we're worried about China shipping products here and having spying capabilities built into motherboards or small electronic chips, we could have been doing the same thing and having front door surveillance into any of these activities. If we cut them off, that pretty much cuts us off at the legs. But according to some experts, blocking shipments of U.S. chips to China may only further enable foreign companies to ramp up their own research efforts. Quote, the Chinese will be more incentivized to develop their own technologies, and U.S. manufacturers will be seen as less reliable and potentially not able to satisfy foreign orders. Like I said, shareholders are going to be screaming, said Horst Simon, deputy director of the U.S. Department of Energy's Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. Yeah, where they're doing all the nuclear research. China has been pushing the development of its own chip industry, and this is likely to accelerate their efforts, Simon said told the Chinese Daily. And you know, here's the other thing. One thing that China is well known to do is to take products that are developed by American companies and reverse engineer them and then put them out as their own. Huawei, Hawaii. Why they make networking products in China. Why, I remember back, it must have been the early to mid 2000s, Cisco coming out saying that Huawei had pretty much taken all their routers and completely ripped them off, took their operating system and pretty much duplicated, without any concern to copyright or ownership rights, all of their code and their usability. And Huawei products are out there. Our federal government's even buying them, which, again, you know, talk about like stupid doing stupid. Why would we be buying Chinese products for our federal fucking government to use? And just recently, I saw that they were thinking about putting Huawei on some sort of international ban list or do not purchase list, but I don't know if that happened. And I don't know if that lawsuit from Cisco ever got settled. I mean, it looked pretty cut and dry back in the day, but I mean, just over the last year, I saw that there were still rumblings and Huawei was still in business. Quote, with the exception of Intel chips, the rest of the Tianhe 2 technology was developed domestically within China. The Commerce Department declined to comment for the Journal's report on Thursday, and PC World said that an employee of the National Supercomputing Center of Guanghao said that they were, quote, not very clear on the situation. Even if they did stop selling, there is nothing to prevent China from getting Intel chips or anyone else's chips from a number of alternative sources. Well, of course, black market. I'm sure that they probably have lots of international resellers from other countries where Intel chips are not banned. To keep individual components like a processor out of somebody's hands is almost impossible in today's market, says Jim McGregor, an industry analyst with Trias Research in Mesa, Arizona. China had planned to upgrade its machine later in 2015, the BBC reported, to give it a speed of 110 petaflops, Meanwhile, Intel has signed a $200 million deal with the US government to build the Aurora supercomputer at the Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois. Oh, there we go. That's why we're cutting China out of the deal, because we're going to build our own. Once completed, that machine will have a peak performance of 180 petaflops, which of course is faster than the 110 that the Chinese were planning on upgrading to this year, which is around six times faster than the current Chinese supercomputer speed. Oh, isn't that nice? When the top 500 project released last year, the last annual supercomputer rankings in November 2014, the U.S. developed Titan supercomputer had placed second to China, followed by IBM Sequoia. So, I don't know. Seems interesting blocking a an American tech company from selling technological products to international companies when we're looking at passing things such as the TPP. Pretty much TPP is going to encourage tech companies to go to other countries where they can manufacture products cheaper and then force us to buy them. Seems definitely interesting that we're holding a corporation such as Intel's feet to the proverbial fire. But, hey, we gave them a couple million-dollar military contract to work on building our own supercomputer. But how long do you think that's going to last? And like I said, knowing the situation with Apple, it definitely will be interesting to watch and see how this all plays out. All right, speaking of NASA and Intel. Here was a story that I saw on space.com the other day that I thought was pretty significant as far as mad science goes, man, that I did not see anywhere else outside of space.com. And this should be definitely like a red light to us. That things have gone to the point of where we have made ourselves gods. Listen to this. NASA scientists cook up building blocks of life in the lab. Now, anyone who ever took basic biology growing up remembers that, that's always the question, where did life come from? Did we really have the Big Bang? Did we have evolution? Did it come from an asteroid? Where did these single-celled organisms grow from out of nothing to then develop multi-celled organisms, to then develop aquatic organisms, to then develop brains, to then develop legs, to then, come up and become mammals? And continue on the evolutionary scale. Well, according to NASA Tomorrowland, many of the chemical ingredients necessary for life as we know it were available on early Earth and should be present on exoplanets as well, says new research from NASA. Researchers at NASA's Ames Research Center in California generated three key components of RNA and DNA in the lab by exposing commonly occurring ring-shaped molecules of carbon and nitrogen to radiation under space-like conditions. Nobody really knows how life got started on Earth, says Scott Sanford, a space science researcher at Ames, in a statement. Our experiments suggest that once the Earth formed, many of the building blocks of life were likely present from the beginning. Since we are simulating universal astrophysical conditions, the same is likely wherever planets are formed. Sanford and his colleagues worked with pyridamine, a ring-shaped molecule often found in meteorites. The rings hold carbon atoms, but the presence of nitrogen makes pyridamine less stable than other carbon-rich compounds, researchers said. As a result, pyridamine is easily destroyed by radiation, which is prevalent in interstellar space. We wanted to test whether pyridamine can survive in space and whether it can undergo reactions that turn it into more complicated organic species. Pyridamine should be vulnerable to destruction when traveling through the universe as a gas. But the researchers reason that some molecules might be able to survive if they find their way into interstellar clouds of dust and gas. Such clouds could serve as a shield, absorbing much of the radiation on the outer edges and keeping it from reaching the interior. Safe inside the clouds, pyridamine molecules would freeze onto dust grains, which might allow them to survive any radiation that it would be exposed to later. To test their ideas, scientists exposed an ice sampling containing pyridamine to ultraviolet radiation in a vacuum at temperatures as low as minus 440 degrees Fahrenheit, conditions similar to those experienced in interstellar space. When frozen in ice consisting mainly of water, but also containing ammonia, methanol, or methane, the pyridamine was much less vulnerable to radiation than it would be as a free-floating gas, and instead of destroying the molecules, the radiation transformed it into a new species, including uracil, cytosine, and thymine, three of the nucleobases that make up DNA and RNA. How freaky is that, man? Like, they literally, this has been like the chicken and the egg question for as long as I've been alive and understanding science and trying to determine, my own theories on how life was created. Did someone wave a magic wand, or was it possible with the raw building blocks of life? And it looks like they're getting pretty close to being able to show that absolutely it could have been created by a freak chance of, some conditions happening. Quote, "We are trying to address the mechanisms in space that are forming these molecules," says Ames researcher Christopher Maltaries. "Considering what we have produced in the laboratory, the chemistry of ice exposed to ultraviolet radiation may be an important linking step between what goes into space and what fell to Earth early in its development." Although scientists know that pyridamine is found in meteorites, they are still uncertain about its ultimate origins, like the more stable carbon-rich polycyclic aromatic, my God, like it's early, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, considered as a potential material to kickstart life. Pyridamine may be produced by the dying breaths of red giant stars or in clouds of interstellar gas and dust, said the researchers. So, I mean, that's pretty interesting, I have to say. Like I mentioned, though, the only place I saw this story was on space.com. And, I guess that doesn't surprise me. Scientists in the lab are more concerned about creating synthetic life than they are creating biological life. But yes, chicken, the egg, or the rooster. The rooster did it all. All right, so to get back here, there's a new tick-borne disease, and we're going to talk about that one tomorrow because there's a clip with us that I want you guys to hear, but it's called the Powassan virus. It is very, very similar to Lyme's disease. We've talked about that. We've talked about the origins of Lyme's. We've talked about Plum Island. We've talked about using, and this was some of the research we dug into last week with Eric Traub, another Nazi brought over in Operation Paperclip, who seems to have connections with Plum Island as well. He was a veterinarian and he did research into diseases and bioweapons utilizing insects to spread them. Well, this new Powassan virus that they have discovered in Connecticut. So, any of you up there in the upper Northeast, beware this year. This Powassan virus, Powassan, is how it's spelled, is very similar to Lyme's disease, except that it's worse and there is no treatment at all. At least with Lyme's, they found if you catch it early, you can use some of the cephalosporin antibiotics to knock it out before it gets into your joints where then it can hide like a corkscrew for 20 years and it isn't very treatable. But this Powassan virus has no treatment. Now, like we've been talking, all of these diseases that are appearing everywhere, never before seen, hasn't been seen in 50 years. How amazing. Must be global warming. I don't think that this is any fucking accident, as this is happening in conjunction with this whole mad science gone mad moving forward with these RNAi vaccines, mad science mixing shit and using us as a guinea pig, pushing vaccines on our children. And I saw that the bill had moved forward in California, by the way. Hold on one second, we will find that story. And now this whole new thing between now and 2020 to get all adults with their boosters. Don't think that this isn't a grand plan. And then tie that all into Obamacare, tie that into nanotechnology, tie that into the ultimate takeover of biological life, and you're going to see a really scary picture starting to form. Take a look at what happened in Australia last week, where the Prime Minister had decided that anyone that was getting any type of payments from the state for their child, and I mean, think about it here. We all get child care credits or child, right? You get your $3,600 tax deduction for a kid, I think it is, for here. They could pull that here. You're not on record with Obamacare as your kids getting vaccinated. You're not going to get your tax deduction. Your kids won't be able to go to a public school. I don't know. Maybe we're going to make you pay more for health insurance. That could be a new one. And by the way, no doctors on Obamacare is going to see you. I mean, I could definitely see that happening in the near future. Here, this is out of like lefty liberal make me want to puke MSNBC. I hate this network. But the headline is, and this was from April Enverstein, actually. They posted this Thursday or Friday. California approves bill banning child vaccine exemptions. We talked about this, the religious exemption or the health exemption that a lot of states offer right now, where you could be a conscientious objector. They are working on getting rid of, if possible, in California, because of course that is where the trip to Disney World ruined Johnny's vacation when he got a case of the measles. California lawmakers, so this was dated April 9th, California lawmakers approved a bill this week that would prevent most parents from opting out of vaccinations for their children enrolled in school just months after the state was hit with the largest U.S. measles outbreak in decades. Yes, of course it is. I mean, guys, I'm glad that you listen to the show, and I hope that most of you at least can follow my train of thinking, where I'm pointing out those red button beep, 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 because it is just so apparent to me, and I cannot get over. I mean, I've had arguments with Vacker friends, and actually, one of my friends I haven't seen in about a year. We're probably going to get together in a couple weeks. She's got a daughter, and we worked together for many years, but that's one topic that I know. I mean, she's my friend, and we've known each other for a lot of years, but she definitely is one of those people that, like, on the fringe, I wouldn't be able to talk about this. I wouldn't be able to talk about the anti-vaxxer because I am absolutely wrong. You know, and I mean, I don't hold that against her because that is, I mean, she's in the machine. And I used to be in the machine. And that's the exact reason why. And I mean, we were in the same machine. It's exactly the main reason why I'm out of the machine. Because once I got out of the machine, I was able to see and think more clearly. Anyway, let me finish the story about the California bill. Legislators endured an intense, and there were all kinds of protests going on outside when they were voting on this. Legislators endured an intense, nearly 4-hour hearing ahead of the vote on Wednesday, with many people rising out of their seats and shouting over lawmakers, said the Sacramento Bee. The measure, which passed 6-2, must go through several additional hearings before a potential vote on the California Senate floor. The bill, which was drafted in response to recent outbreaks of preventable diseases like measles and whooping cough. Remember the whooping cough outbreak? We mentioned that the other day, too. All these kids in the upper Pacific Northwest getting this whooping cough. And then I read a whole bunch of stories that had said that the majority of those children that got the whooping cough actually got the vaccination. But remember, we talked about that too. See, they can win coming or going. Isn't that how the game is always stacked against us? If it comes out, if we are able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt to all these vaccine, pro-vaccine people that the vaccines are actually causing some issues, what they're going to turn around and say is then these old school vaccines that we use need to be new and improved with these new RNAi vaccines, okay? So don't think that we win by pointing to the fact that a lot of these outbreaks, including the measles, I mean, I don't think that they ever actually swabbed that kid, that patient zero out of Disneyland who got the measles to then spread it. I don't think they ever swabbed him to determine whether or not it was old school wild measles, which would mean, yes, that he did catch it from an unvaccinated child, or if it was the domestic measles, which are the measles that are in the actual vaccine. So that was never determined. But remember, whatever way we slice and dice this, so okay, let's pretend that we're just going to say it was all those unvaccinated free-range children that got us sick. Okay, well then mandatory vaccinations for everyone. But like I said, if they determine that it was ineffective vaccines, which like we're waving the flag going, ah, your fucking vaccines don't work, so to you, well, they're going to turn around and say, well, good, look at all these vaccines, new and improved, that go in with the synthetic shit and build little factories inside your body using nanotech. We go in and reprogram your T cells, make them whatever from cancer to whooping cough, ready to go fight a new battle. You can just get one of these vaccines and it'll be all fixed and better. And they're mandatory because you know what? This new biometrics that we're putting out is gonna know whether or not you got vaccinated. And if you don't have a vaccine and we long distance scan your iris, and they just came out with something that I don't even remember how many feet it was like 30 feet now they can scan your fucking iris. In this video, they were showing the cops pulling up behind a car and being able to take their beam and catch your iris through your side view mirror and scan it to identify you. You're going to become a biohazard once they determine that you haven't gotten this newfangled vaccination. It's a frightening, frightening thing. I mean, I don't remember who mentioned it in chat on Friday, but something about Logan's Run. I mean, if you remember that, that's going to be what it's like, and then be chased by freaking autonomous drones with 230-point facial recognition to take us out. And this is not a good scene that we're painting here. All right, let me finish reading this story anyway on this California bill. So all I'm saying is don't think we win by proving that some of these vaccines that they're giving right now are bullshit, because we don't. It actually is from the frying pan into the fire. Why today we let them use their ineffective vaccines? Because at least the majority of them still use some sort of, even though we have additives and preservatives such as thimerosal and things in there, formaldehyde, at least they were using old school immunological theory, except for the Gardasil vaccine, which is using virus-like particle synthetic nanotechnology. But you know, any of the old school are typically still using basic immunology. You know, you got to look at what adjuvant is in there. Aluminum obviously isn't good. Definitely want to stay away from the squalene. Excuse me, but you don't want to get these new RNAi vaccines in you. All right, let's finish this. The bill, which was drafted in response to recent outbreaks of preventable diseases like measles and whooping cough, eliminates the quote-unquote personal belief exemption that currently allows parents in California not to vaccinate their children before enrolling in a public or private school. Quote, I have very profound feelings about parental rights and the responsibilities and great dismay in American society over the decades. how much that parental rights, the parental responsibility has diminished, says Republican Senator Jim Nielsen, one of the two lawmakers opposing the bill, according to the Sacramento Bee. Public health officials point to extensive research showing vaccines protect the common good and that adverse side effects are rare. Right. And that extensive research we already established through a couple major stories showing that a lot of the research that's put into these medical journals that they're using as quote unquote proof were later found to be fraudulent, paid, incorrect, you know, all the above. And the FDA never went back and had them remove that research out of the industry scientific publications. So what can you trust? You can't. And so these fuckers are using fraudulent studies that have been allowed by the agency that is supposed to be watching this and then using that against us. And then pointing and saying that we're crazy. Well, we're not crazy, okay? They are wrong. The debate about vaccines was renewed earlier this year when a measles outbreak originated at the amusement park in California, ultimately affecting hundreds of people in nearly two dozen states. Yes, that killer disease, measles, we talked about that too. I mean, obviously, you can get ancillary infections that could make you get very sick on the, you know, upper respiratory, brain inflammation and things of that nature. But the majority of people who get measles never get that. Measles were something that the majority of children got. And I mean, I even got measles. They found out that the original measles vaccination that we got in the 60s and the early 70s was not that effective. And I got that measles back in the late 80s, early 90s when I was in college when they had the big outbreak down in Pennsylvania. Since January, 159 people from at least 18 states and Washington, D.C. were reported to have measles, according to the CDC. The multi-state outbreak began last December when 40 people who visited or worked at Disneyland in Orange County earlier that month had contracted the disease. Hundreds of other people were isolated and tracked during their incubation period in case they developed the highly contagious and potentially deadly disease. The recent outbreak occurred 15 years after it was determined that vaccination had eradicated homegrown measles. Much of the outbreak occurred in the California area where immunization rates have been falling for years as parents frequently choose not to immunize their children. People who are vaccinated against measles are immune and cannot contract the virus. Oh, is that like the fucking chickenpox vaccine? You know, you get that chickenpox vaccine, which is some newfangled. I mean, everybody got fucking chickenpox. They don't need a chickenpox vaccine. And you can still get the fucking chickenpox. I got measles. I got the measles vaccine. People who are vaccinated against measles are immune and cannot contract the virus, they say. Helping create what scientists call herd immunity. Yes, the dumb fucks in the herd. That's what I call it. But when the overall immunization rate drops below a certain level, the disease can gain a foothold, particularly among vulnerable populations like babies and the elderly. When I read this stuff, I just... Oh. All right. That's it. I'm not reading about Rand Paul. So beware, beware, beware. They're trying to really push it in California, the ultra-liberal state. New York will be next. So, all right, for the last 10, 12 minutes or so, we are now going to read about something that I dug up while I was reading about Eric Traub, the Nazi scientist who got stuck on the Soviet side of Germany, Eastern Germany, when the U.S. handed that over to the Soviets, who then raped and pillaged the Germans for many years. I did watch the documentary that I mentioned the other day that was dropped to me by my friend, The Rape of Germany. And I have to say that what we know about Eastern Germany is very wrong. This is horrific what I saw. But anyway, this Eric Traub was on the Soviet side of Germany after World War II, that we handed to the Soviets to then rape and pillage. And the Europeans, the UK, and the English sent in some sort of secret team to rescue Eric Traub because his knowledge of biowarfare was so great. Of course, we didn't want the Soviets to have him. And while I was researching that, I came across another program that I had never heard of, and I thought I wanted to share it with you. And this would be something for some research and maybe that we can dig into. I saw that there are additional unclassified documents here. Oh, I see that there's some other pretty crazy shit here too. It is called Project MK Naomi, Naomi. We all have heard of MK Ultra, which was mind control. We're going to get into that one of these days. And this was MK Naomi. It is a Department of Defense CIA research program that lasted from the 1950s through the 1970s. Oh, how interesting that it was right during the times that we apparently had a biological warfare program. Unclassified information about MK Naomi and related Special Operations Division is scarce. It is generally reported to be a successor to the MK Delta project, which I have not read about that one, so that might be a new one for research. And to have focused on biological projects, including biological warfare agents, specifically to store materials that could either incapacitate or kill a test subject, and to develop devices for diffusion of such materials. Now, we read, Eric Traub and Plum Island in particular, one of the technologies that they were working on is using all kinds of insects for dispersing pathogens, namely mosquitoes, which, that's got to make you worry now as they're dispersing the Oxitec GMO mosquitoes. They used fleas, ticks. What was the other one? There was one more. Tsetse flies, which, we didn't see anything more than that one story about ISIS getting the flesh-eating disease now over in the Middle East. Middle East, not Middle Yeast with a Y. Middle East, from the tsetse fly. We also have fruit flies. They use fruit flies a lot in the lab because they reproduce so quickly, and they can watch genetic information pass from generation to generation within a number of weeks versus a number of years. Says during the first 20 years of MK Naomi's establishment, the CIA engaged in various projects designed to increase U.S. biological and chemical warfare capabilities. Project MK Naomi was initiated to provide the CIA with a covert support base to meet its top secret operational requirements. The purpose was to establish a, quote, robust arsenal within the CIA's Technical Services Division, acronym TSD, and of which was to consist of various lethal and incapacitating materials. This would enable the TSD to serve as a highly maintained center for the circulation of biological and chemical materials. Wow! How does that make you feel? Another thing, speaking of circulation of biological and chemical materials, my dad and I this weekend were hanging out. We were watching the weather and all this crazy weather moving across the Midwest. And he's like, "Holy shit, man, look at this weather again moving across Kansas." And I'm like, "Yeah, remember my show from a couple weeks ago talking about limes?" Well, yeah, I was talking about limes, but talking about Plum Island and them moving Plum Island. Currently, it's being the contagions are being held at the University of Kansas Biotechnology Division future to be moved to a level three or a level four facility that is currently being built down in Manhattan, Kansas. But it's right in freaking Tornado Alley. You're moving all those pathogens for livestock, mind you, because remember, that's the type of quote-unquote research they do there, diseases on animals. And we're doing research only to keep the animals safe, of course. Wink. Since our biological warfare program ended in the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s. Wink. But you moved them right to the heartland of the USA in Tornado Alley. Not a bright idea. Seems like they really, really want this shit to get out. Or it'll just be a good excuse, man, for when the shit really hits the fan and there are 10,000 pathogens out there. They can be like, oh my God, we never saw this coming. A tornado hit our secure facility. Anyway, let's get back to this Project MK Naomi. Surveillance, testing, upgrading, and the evaluation of special materials and items were also provided by MK Naomi so as to ensure that no defects or unwanted contingencies emerged during operational conditions. For these purposes, the U.S. Army's Special Operations Command, more affectionately known as SOC, was assigned to assist the CIA in the development, testing, and maintenance procedures for the biological agents and delivery systems. So the Army as well as the CIA were working together on this. Both the CIA and the SOC also modified guns that fired special darts coated with biological agents and various poisonous pills. The darts would serve to incapacitate guard dogs, infiltrate the area that dogs were guarding, and then awaken the dogs upon exiting the facility. In addition, the SOC was also designated to research the potentials for using biological agents against other animals and crops. I mean, animals and crops, Plum Island, I just... this just makes me so angry. It never ended, people. And you know, now they don't have to use poisonous darts and guns. What do you think unmanned aerial vehicles and robo-bees are going to be used for? In a 1967 CIA memo, which was uncovered by the Church Committee, it was confirmed to give evidence of at least three covert techniques for attacking and poisoning crops that have been examined under field conditions. Now, that's another question. You know, you get this facility that's not only working on livestock diseases and biological warfare, but also crop diseases and biological warfare, and you bring them offshore to the center of our country in the heartland of agriculture. How? Who was the Einstein that decided that was a good idea? We should 100% demand all the records be open. But since the White House doesn't have to give up FOIA anymore, I don't think we'll ever get anything from them about any of this. But put it smack dab in Kansas. On November 25th, 1969, President Richard Nixon, wink-wink, abolished any military practice involving biological weapons. Yeah, like we trust, too, Richard Nixon, who was in the middle of using Agent Orange down in Vietnam at the time, that he abolished any biological weapons. Yeah. And Project MK Naomi was dissolved. Wink. Like, HAARP isn't under the control currently of DARPA. No, it shut down, right? Wink. Or so we do. Ding, 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 ding. On February 14th, 1970, a presidential order was given to outlaw all the stockpiles of bacteriological weapons and non-living toxins. However, despite the presidential order, a CIA scientist was able to acquire an estimated 11 grams of deadly shellfish toxin from SOC personnel at Fort Detrick. Wasn't Fort Detrick Plum Island? Hold on. There were a couple forts. One was in Maryland, and one was actually the name for Plum Island. Oh, Fort Detrick, U.S. Army Medical Command installation located in Frederick, Maryland. So this was the Maryland facility. It was the center of the U.S. biological weapons program from 1943 to 1969. It's lovely. The toxin was then stored. So after he got it, after it was shut down, the toxin was then stored in a CIA laboratory where it remained undetected for over 5 years. And we've also found out, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of this stuff is probably at the CDC. A lot of the other stuff has moved to other locations. You know, don't think that this research was ended because it never was. You know, it's just all being done under the guise of defense against other countries using biological warfare and infectious diseases against us. Let's go back to this Fort Detrick really quick before we run out of some time. We got a couple, it's probably about a minute and a half left. Fort Detrick, Maryland, historically was the center for the U.S. biological weapons program from 43 to 1969. And since the discontinuation of that program, it has hosted most elements of the biological defense program. As early as 2010, Fort Detrick's 1,200-acre campus supported a multi-governmental community that conducts biomedical research and development, medical material management, global medical communications, and the study of foreign plant pathogens. It is home to the U.S. Army's Medical Research and Materiel Command, with its biological, the Biodefense Agency, and the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. So it never stopped. It is also host to the National Cancer Institute. Oh, and is home to the National Interagency Confederation of Biological Research, as well as the National Interagency Biodefense Campus. Fort Detrick is the largest employer in Frederick County, Maryland. And here we go, people. It's over. All right, everybody, try to have an awesome Wednesday. I will be back in the home base in a couple hours. Stick around for Wednesday radio.